Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hi, welcome to the QuakeCast, the first one of 2020. Happy New Year, everybody. Today's episode is a little different format. We've got a series of interviews with different mappers who were all involved with the Christmas Jam 2019 project. And this is part one of a multi-part series. We just had too many interviews to fit, and I need a little bit more time to edit the rest of them as well. So without further ado, we're going to jump right in with JCR. So JCR, you've got double duty today because you're not only a guest, but you're also a co-host today. But so let's put your guest hat on now and let's talk about your Christmas Jam map. What was the inspiration?
So I had a really grand, ambitious idea for it, and I didn't have much time. So I had to dial it back from what it was going to be. I ended up completing it in what? 2.5 weeks or something like that. I don't remember what I wrote in the readme, but it was like 2.5 weeks. For the majority of the jam, I had completed maybe like 50% of it. So it had been sitting there for a while. And it wasn't until pretty much the very last few weeks that I was able to really grind it out. But like, I kind of wanted to do like a Christmas map, but I didn't want to do a Christmas map with like the typical like Santa Claus and, you know, Christmas trees, that kind of thing. So I wanted it to be like a little bit more brutal. And, you know, like I just came off of playing Blasphemous, which, by the way, is a really awesome 2D side scroller Metroidvania.
Nice.
But it has its influences. Like, artistically, it has these, like, influences that are clearly from, like, Catholic Christian art. And that was really cool to see. And in a way, they made, like, their own Christian analog lore, you know? And it's interesting because they did all this without really, like, they didn't want to step on anyone's toes. They didn't want to offend anyone. So it was done, I want to say in parallel. I mean, that would be for them to say, whoever, like the guys who developed that. But I figured, hey, I should try doing that in a way. So I took this idea of, like, you have these martyrs that are all in a cave, right? And they're all crucified, and you have to pick which ones to follow. So there's one that's on a, they're not really crosses. It's like a T, mm-hmm. You know? So the one in the middle, which is like the main one, has like this gold gilded rose textures in the back, and has like a golden aura emanating from him. It also has, like, I put in like some little magical chime sounds, right? Yeah. So I made it like this one in particular is holy compared to the others. So it was like an experiment. I wanted to see if players would listen to the mob, that is all of the other martyrs, who when you approach them, they have lines along the lines of like, don't listen to him. He's a liar. Others would say things like, take his powers for yourself, things like that, right? So then if you approach the gold one, the one I was talking about, he says something different. He says, deny the easy path and follow me, or something along those lines. You know, like, this is right. An obvious, like, Jesus analogy I'm going for here.
Right.
Now, 90% of all the demos I watched, they just instantly kill that guy and take the easy exit. Because what happens is, the easy exit, when you kill this Christ-like character, it opens up a side door where you can get the gold key and just leave. Now, the other way was, if you kill all the others except the gold one, that will unlock the other way, which involves you casting yourself into a pit of lava and collecting the rune at the bottom, which is the correct ending. And I have the intermission camera showing There's okay, so I kind of jumped ahead. You have this the gold character, right? And then next to him is an empty crucifix. So what's supposed to happen is you jump into the lava, and then in the intermission camera, it shows a new zombie next to the golden crucifix. It was all kind of rushed, and you know, the map itself, the way it plays, isn't necessarily the way I wanted it. I wanted it to have jumping. You know, I wanted to have like a couple of horde fights, but you know, it was a real challenge to cram it all into the short time frame I had to work and the space allotted.
There's like a moment where there's like a stain map kind of thing that you did with a big bloody thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So explain that, because that kind of threw me off a little bit when I was
watching. That was just some funny little thing I picked up. I learned about like A-frame. You could trigger like A-frames on textures.
Right.
A texture has like a, you know, like a button texture has like a texture 0, texture 1, and then texture A, like if it's active. So Arcane Dimensions has this thing where you can trigger an A-frame. And in fact, I'm not sure if that's even exclusive to AD, but I had never used it before. And I thought, okay, well, it'd be cool if I can get the snow a little bloody. Yeah, so basically once a certain count is hit on like the monsters, it just flips the texture.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's funny because that bloody texture that I left in there was actually a placeholder for something that was going to be more detailed. But I didn't get time to like, you know, go back and fix it. So I left it in and, you know, I kind of embraced the over the topness of it.
Right. I love the ice that you had to break the ice on the buttons as well, where, you know, the shootables.
Yeah. I mean, I could have done more. I could have done more breakable stuff. But yeah, I mean, it was fun. I'm pleased with how it turned out, given the circumstances.
There's other maps in your future, I think.
Yeah, I'll say that it was basically broken. The map was broken up until like maybe an hour before the deadline.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was a real hack job. I'm pretty hard on myself, so I recognize that, like, hey, yeah, okay. I at least did something.
So textures that you use, were those just AD textures, or did you have a certain set you used?
I used a handful, and honestly, at this point, I kind of forget what textures are in there. But I know like there's Christmas Jam textures from previous years, stuff that Sock has done. There's some DM4.
RC was commenting in his playthrough video about you, how you have those, you know, the snow falling in the horizon and all that stuff. That's pretty cool. It was a nice detail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because you're dealing with such a limited space, I figured we're going to make stuff. And, you know, some of the other guys went overboard with it, but I wanted to give little pokes, poke little holes through the map where you can see out of the cave, you know, to give the impression of you being in a cave and not just in a 1024 box.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do in maps. And that comes from like, you know, Level Lord back in the 90s. And he always said that, you know, just having those little areas just add so much life. So I try to put that in all my maps. I don't always do it, but I try to put some unreachable area that gives you more scope.
Speaking of unreachable areas, the only secret that I managed to put in there, I'm going to go ahead and spoil it now since everybody missed it. It's up in a branch of a tree that's outside the cave. So what you're supposed to do is shoot the branch. You can see there's a backpack in it, right? So when you shoot the branch, it breaks and the backpack drops. You know, I would have put more secrets if I had more time, but you know, that's the one I had and everybody missed it because no one looks up when they play.
Right, exactly. Even mappers, I find myself not looking up.
For sure.
Like, oh, I gotta look up. Well, my suggestion, not that I need to give you any suggestion, but maybe some.
You're the maestro.
No, I'm not. But anyway, if there are other mappers who are just starting out, if there's a gameplay mechanic that that you want someone to know about, one way to do it is to have it kind of at the beginning of the map have a similar mechanic. So you know, you would the branch would be blocking your way, and you'd shoot it. And the branch would fall, and then later, hopefully, if they're looking up, you know, they might know that, oh, I can shoot those branches, and then, you know, that kind of
thing. It's interesting. You know, you pick up all these little things from seeing others' maps.
Yeah, absolutely. Our next guest is Ionis, and he has a magnificent entry in the Christmas Jam. So here's Ionis on his Christmas Jam map, and I can't even pronounce the thing. You've been deeply involved with the Christmas Jam over the years, so tell us, you know, how you approached 2019 and what was different this year.
It was different for me. When I ran the event in 2018, I thought it went pretty well. I had a really good turnout. I think there were 21 maps. I was kind of gratified to see that there was that level of interest. From that point, I'm like, yeah, shit, why don't I do this every year? I mean, it's a fun event. While I was putting together 2018, I was really behind at the end. And Ball stepped in to help me with the start map, and Suck helped with organizing the pack behind the scenes stuff. So that was, I believe, the weekend before Christmas. I managed to anger wives on three continents due to sucking people into Xmas Jam. Paul was telling me, I was supposed to go out this weekend. I had the weekend off, but I've been at my computer in my underwear the entire weekend working on this thing. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's very generous of you. I'm sorry I completely ruined your wife's plans, but I thought that was quite an accomplishment. I'm sure they were women around the globe.
It was for a good cause.
It was for a good cause. So when I had ran that, I had planned on releasing two maps with the pack. I did finish the 80 Mountain one, Shadowman Plain. I had started a Nave one. When I started that map, my intention was I had the story beforehand. An archaeologist wandering the Saudi Arabia, or as it was referred to at that time, the Empty Quarter, which is the translation of the name of the 2019 map, El Robai Helia, that translates to the Empty Quarter. And the idea was I wanted to make a map that was based around secrets progression. You had to find secrets to make your way forward. And that's why I put an rope at the beginning, because I was pretty confident that there were going to be some players that were like, yeah, find secrets to progress. No, thank you. I'm out. Peace. So I wanted that option. And as I started to build the map and fill in areas that I have earmarked for secrets began to be integrated into the normal layout and progression. So then it's kind of like, well, I didn't think I had many secret areas left. So I'm like, oh, let's just go to a more standard. There'll be exploration. You'll have to kind of break your architecture a bit, kind of like you're an archaeologist digging deeper into a tomb, but it won't be quite as much secret based. So I did not finish it last year, so I didn't have much time this year, understandably, because I had a child on the way. So it was convenient that I had a map half finished, so I was able to wrap that up and get it out this year. I plan on running the event this year, but having a child, that's not tenable. I mean, my wife handles enough burden for me to be at my laptop 3 or 4 hours a day while she's doing things on her own. I did not think would be a fair to her in the slightest bit.
Well, you know, Fairweather stepped in, did a pretty bang up job of kind of keeping things going and organized. So yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, Fairweather was awesome with everything. I was very glad that he decided to step up because he's a very capable organizer. A really hyper-talented map, bro. Rather jealous at how quickly he maps.
It kind of floors me how fast he can iterate on something that would take me, you know, first of all, I wouldn't think of the designs he thinks of, and second of all, he just bangs them out really quick. Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, like I think it was SM195, his Quick Honey map. Quick Honey is like a full, it felt like 4,000 to 6,000 brush map with like 120 monsters up to some of that. In fact, I'm like, you did this over 3 days? That's that's a level of productivity I can only aspire to.
Yeah, he when I saw his first honey, or not honey, but his first coffee map, I was like, what? How did you do this in an hour? There's no way.
Yeah, coffee was...
That's a whole other conversation. Coffee was another monster work.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Coffee was wonderful. It was a great concept. And I think it was him and Zungru that kind of ran that, and it turned out very well. And I kind of enjoyed having to finish everything in 2 hours because it kind of it cuts off the sprawl that a lot of projects can fall prey to.
Yeah, I learned a lot doing. Yeah, I learned a lot doing that 2 hour version originally. So the first batch were 1 hour. I think the first episode was 1 hour. Yep. And then they changed it. They said, okay, we'll just, you know, honor system. And I got to say, guys, I went over a little 2 hours, but not a whole lot over.
Just, how dare you?
There were some showstoppers, but there was a showstopper I had to fix. And I only did one. Yeah, I only did one of those.
Damn it. I meant to say, I said RC because RC is on my screen, but I meant to say JCR boot him. Okay. Yeah, because it's JCR here. It says okay, RC on my screen. That's messing me up.
That's right. Yeah, at this point, we're kind of interchangeable voice-wise. I've been practicing.
Hello. Hello, Quakers. Hello, Quakers.
That was convincing.
That's a great impression.
RC, you're back.
I love the man. I love the man. I do that with all love.
Amazing.
Right there. So
we're going to talk about the map more or what?
No, let's talk about, So now what I wanted to ask about your map in the most recent Christmas Jam was that, you know, you have such a strong story. I know you did, fan fiction. You've written before extensively. So I can see that seeping into Quake. So do you think in the future or even with this map, like you're, like storytelling is going to become more a part of your process?
No, because when I originally conceived the map, the story was going to be a far more involved. Like every time you picked up a journal, you were going to get a full paragraph. And in every secret, if you notice, is kind of that nave teleport texture embedded onto the wall. Earlier in the map, that was going to be indecipherable to him, you know, the ruins I've never seen before. But as the place slowly began to corrupt him, if you went back to those, you would get lore because his mind has started to change, so he's more perceptive to otherworldly languages. And it kind of got the idea of the film Arrival, where once you started to understand the language, it kind of changed your way of thinking. So that was kind of my inspiration for that. And I had lore that was going to be the Abdul Alzared's original journey through there. And in H.P. Lovecraft lore, he's devoured in midair in broad daylight by an invisible force. So whatever he found down there hunted him. So I was kind of going to play into that idea where he was pretty sure that whatever he found down there, he would never be shed from. It would always follow him. And yeah, I was going to incorporate a lot of that. There was going to be a lot of self-reflection from the protagonist as kind of like a devout Christian, how what he was seeing was kind of challenging kind of his worldview on things, seeing things kind of outside God's design and such. And I had to cut that. I finished all my gameplay and architecture, but the lore, I just couldn't get it done in time. So unfortunately, I had to cut
it. Oh, it's very ambitious.
Yeah.
I think that's worth revisiting that stuff at some point, though. I love all that. I mean, it's a cool addition. As long as it doesn't interrupt gameplay, I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's what I like about Quake. It's optional.
I just loved when at the very beginning of your map, you're setting up that like, oh, I got to jump down and, you know, just I love the way you set it up. Or like, this is going to be different from the get go. So pay attention, and then it's all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, I guess one thing I should also mention is in Arcane Dimensions, you have a lot different monster bestiary. If you're talking from a narrative standpoint and talking standard ID Quake, a lot of the enemies that you face are almost all of them really, except for base enemy and dogs, are otherworldly in nature. So as soon as things like that start cropping up, it's clear that you are in the midst of a nightmare. There is no gray area. It's very clear that you are outside the normal experience of what this world would offer on a surface level. With AD, you have monsters like spiders, scorpions. So you have things that could reasonably you might fight on your own. So it allows for a more gradual slip into a nightmare. So that was something that I kind of wanted to play up. And admittedly, people have made this complaint. Maybe people use more spiders more than they should in AD maps, like they've become very prevalent, but I like that it allows you to gradually slip into the nightmare. So when from the start, when I knew that, okay, I'm going to be using spiders because I want to kind of there be a slow descent into this nightmare, that's when I conceived the egg section, because I wanted there to be – the spiders are pretty easy to fight. So I kind of, I thought, though, maybe the better way to create tension would be to have kind of like a big ambush just very early in the map, so that it was a little more interesting than just like fighting one or two isolated spiders.
Yeah, I love that little section. It's really creepy.
What was really cool was the way you integrated, like you went from the spiders to the scorpion, and then you introduced the Vorling.
Oh, no, that was a very intentional choice, because when he's fighting spiders and he sees a three-legged spider, like, okay, wait a second. Spiders don't have three legs. What's this? Yeah.
You had a message there also, something to the effect that you were saying, like, this isn't part of God's design.
Yes.
I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it, because it's like, it's exactly as you described. You're slipping in to this nightmare. Where it sealed the deal for me was when you broke that wall and you saw the Vors just hanging out on the other side, and it looked like a dwelling of sorts. It was like a you had like I don't remember the texture, but it looked like a web. Yeah, you know, like it fit really well.
Yeah, that was my intention when I started. When I was designing that area, I mentally referred to it as the Hive. And so, yeah, it was intended to convey that the actual Hive structure extended beyond the playable area, and that, you know, it was where they had made their den. If I had time, I would have put alpha textured spider webs in there as well, and probably broken up the architecture a little, maybe done some more kind of like bumpy Hive outcroppings. But I was kind of short on time at that point, so. What you saw is all I really had the opportunity to do.
So then, could you elaborate a little bit on how you came up with, because you reused a lot of these areas very well. How did you come up with this? Like the part where you visit one area, you pick up a tome, you move on, and then you eventually find your way back, and then doors that are in that room open up, revealing more monsters and further expanding the space.
That's probably the most difficult part of it. Like, what I do is I build one area at a time and kind of measure against, because I stayed pretty strict to the 1,024 limit. So I'd make one area, and then I'd kind of look around the map and figure out how much distance I had to the borders and kind of be like, okay, what can I do here? Because I tried to give every area, kind of make at least one distinct thing happen in every area so it was unique. So I did the upper section, filled those out, and then I kind of wanted the player to go down to the bottom of the map, because I had built an area down there, but I didn't want them to enter the center. I just wanted them to kind of have that travel feel like you were moving around like large distances around the map, but still have large areas that you hadn't explored yet. And, yeah, that part came very slowly. I'd build a lot of areas and then be like, how do I connect these? Like, what's the progression here? That kind of took a while. That was probably the hardest part of the map, just the layout and progression. But I tried to insert monsters into areas that you needed to travel to kind of clue the player in on where they were supposed to go, where the next door was opening. Because I didn't think it was appropriate to have a message against every door. I tend not to do that maps. Like, if you approach a door and it doesn't open, it's locked. I don't need a message telling the player that it's locked. Their interaction tells them as such. So it also didn't seem appropriate to give the only one that seemed appropriate was the final one, where a sinister residence behind the final door, to kind of give the player an idea of this is your final goal.
Right, since you don't have so many messages, when you do have a message, it makes it that much more important.
Yeah, like this is something you need to pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, and you also have that lovely limitation of, 2 seconds with the center prints and Quake, which just kills me. It's like so you can't really say a whole lot anyway.
Well, I knew going into that. I'm like, I'm writing long messages. There's people know by now, just drop the console down. I know it breaks gameplay, but I conceded that.
Drives me crazy with Quake. I mean, if you have the tomes in Arcane Dimensions, a whole nother story. But yeah, let's talk about some of the other maps in the pack that I know, because you've been involved with this for a couple of years. And, you know, I mean, you don't have to critique them, but what were some of the ones that kind of made your kind of mouth fly open?
Here's where I disappoint everyone who's listening to this. I haven't played any of the maps.
Well, you're saving them, right?
All right, everyone all together. Oh.
No, literally all my free time was went into design. No, I have seen clips from Heresy's map with the purple veins or pipes extended below the map, and I'm like, that's this guy is far more artistically advanced than I am. And he took like a 15-year quick break from map, and I wonder if he went to like a monastery deep in like the Tibet mountains and like meditated on how to build architecture for 15 years, came back. You are ready. Go forth into the world and open trench room.
I would love to spend my time in a Tibetan monastery mapping for Quake all day and then getting some fresh air in the Himalayas. That's very cool.
Come back, get back to mapping and just make a life.
And you have the dark ambient already built in with a.
Oh, yes. It really gets you in that mind space, man.
Our next guest on this Christmas Jam episode is Heresy, and he has this amazing, really unique looking map called Violet Fluid. So this is a really striking map. JCR, what were your thoughts when you first saw this thing?
Wow, it's purple. It was basically what came to mind at first, but, you know, standing around and looking through it for more than a few seconds, you'll realize there's a lot going on here.
So what was your inspiration then for the map?
The inspiration comes from some screenshots of, I don't remember his or her name, Natalveni,
yeah.
Natalveni, okay. Sorry about that. It was very, very violet or pinky. The fog was very, very good. There was a good ambience. So I decided to make a map with that idea and this ambience.
Well, you did a good job. It's beautifully wrought. And I got to say, everybody that sees the map is just like, whoa, it's amazing. Even the screenshots and everything are just striking. So you have this, you know, pink atmosphere, and then you have a white desert, you know, on a violet planet. So but the beautiful thing about Quake is that you could do whatever you want. You know, you could do these things. So now you used Macon's WAD. How was it using that? How did you, what made you want to use that?
I only use, a rock texture from his pack and, the dirt texture for the desert. Mm-hmm. And, it was very interesting because I cut the dirt, this dirt texture to make the hole in the desert, and it was very fun to get very. It took me a lot of times, but Macon did a really, really good texture pack. I'm using it on another map I'm doing now, but more texture, and yes, it was easy to use. Pretty easy.
Yeah, he gave this texture pack. I've been dying to use it myself. It looks so amazing. So I hope he keeps making textures because they're pretty.
Yes.
Mine. He did a lot of trim too, which everybody loves. Like trim. trim.
Maybe I have to cut the trim into the back. You know, for having some texture on 64x16 or maybe more. You know, to have a tiling texture on Horror East trim, but no, it's a really, really good fact. And when he's posting some screenshot, I'm looking at it on, wow, it's amazing. This guy is doing a great job.
Agreed. It's nice when we have some new artists come into the community and just blow people's minds like that. Like, and you know, honestly, yours as well. Your map is amazing. So, so how did it feel to you working in the 1024 limit? You know, that's a that's something in the Quake Christmas jams that people have been doing for years now. How was this something new for you, to a new challenge?
Yes. When I finished the Halloween jam, it took me a lot of times. So I decided to not making any jam for a couple of months. But when I saw the constraint this constraint of 1024, I decided to participate because it was a really good challenge to make a map. I fix an objective on this map. I want to keep the player for a time about 10 minutes playing into this compact area.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to make some up and down movement. As the term used here in the stream was backtracking. Mm-hmm. You have to find the blue key, going down to open the blue door, find the yellow key, going up to activate the button. So I try really to keep the player playing for a time, and I don't want him to annoy.
I would say you were pretty successful at achieving that, because
I wasn't afraid that long. I was afraid of it could be getting annoying to go up and down, up and down, up and down. I was afraid about that, but it works. It does the job.
That's a big challenge. Because some maps, as you may know, they draw out much longer than they're welcome to, I guess is the best way of saying it. Just some maps are longer than they need to be. And yours, because you put a lot of secrets in it, is also pretty replayable for the player who perhaps doesn't find all of the secrets their first time around.
Did you enjoy the... your own secrets?
I really did. I'm glad we're talking, because I can personally thank you for putting that in. It felt like a Christmas present.
You deserved it. You know, I'm watching all your streams. I didn't watch all the Xmas because I had to finish and don't get spoiled on the other maps.
But, yeah.
Your stream, I love watching your stream. I was waiting for you a moment because... I love the way you are testing the map. You are, and you totally broke the sequence of my Halloween jam map. So this time I try to make an unbreakable sequence. But it's really fun to have to see player like you playing my map. It's really, really enjoyable for me.
Your Halloween map was also brilliant.
I tried. That's right.
Okay, so here's where the old man comes in. Which one was your Halloween map? I know I probably played it or saw it.
Honey, I Shrunk the Ranger. It was the Big Pumpkin map.
Oh, okay. Guess what? I have not played that map yet. I did not watch it either because
okay,
I
dump
wanted
truck,
to play
you
it.
Got some homework.
I know. I'm way behind on my homework. In fact, I need to go to the principal's office because I am so far behind. So my apologies. I'm sorry I haven't played that, but it looks spectacular. And it's from what I understand, it's the only gigantic pumpkin map that's been made for our Halloween jam. So
yeah but
pretty crazy.
Yeah, Bal helped me a lot on this map to work the ambient lighting, mm-hmm. and the fog. And Bal beta test my Xmas jam map. So I think it's the reason why the map is not so breakable and really polished. But I think it's really polished. It's really polished. And I call it violet fluid because of the Nine Inch Nails song.
There's a song called that?
I think it was on a remix album, Violet Flute.
Got it. And I'm a big Nine Inch Nails fan. I'm like, what? Huh? Now I got to find it.
you can't play Quake and I'm not being a fan of Nine Inch Nails.
I have a feeling you're right. Well, you know, I hate to kind of jump off of Christmas Jam, but I will say, I don't know if JCR has seen the screenshots for your new map, but I was looking at them this morning just going, oh my God. So whatever you're up to is looking really nice right now. It's looking spectacular.
It's a map inspired from Lord of the Rings. I took a lot of screenshots from the movie and I'm working the same architecture.
Nice.
Really, 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 really cool to. There's a couple of years I wanted to make a map with that kind of design. I was thinking at the beginning making it on Quake 3, but now since I discovered your tutorials, it's definitely on Quake 1.
Nice.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. I love hearing that. I love Quake 3 too. I love it, but we need better support in the thing. So let me guess, you are I'm looking at these screens, they're so cool. So this would be more of something, not Minas Morgul, but where the orcs where Sam is captured.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, excellent. So I think we're almost finished. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of impart about Quake mapping or any of the projects you're working on?
No, not really. I hear the last Quake cast with I don't remember the name of the guy. He was working on a co-op map, who was really awesome. I saw the video with Akri you did, and it gave me the envy to make a code map, maybe next time.
Good.
Yes. I was thinking of something more, maybe a co-op mod.
Co-op jam.
I'm thinking about a mod with a class system could be really cool on Quake. So. I don't know how to make it, but I don't know if it is possible to make it, but could be fun.
Our last guest of this episode is Greenwood. Now, Greenwood has only been mapping since May of 2019, but he's improved dramatically in that amount of time. He's just really jumped in, and I believe he's got about 13 releases so far in 2019. So 2020, I'm sure, will be pretty crazy for Greenwood.
Why don't you tell us a little bit then about Old Terror Bomb?
With Old Terror Bomb, you know, which is just basically it's a play on, like, you know, the Old Christmas Tree, Old Tannenbaum. Mm-hmm. I figured you had the constraints of the 1024 cube, and I didn't want to have it to where it was, you know, feel like cramped play. So I kind of kept it fairly open to where there was lots of, you know, tiered levels throughout the map, and you can, you know, jump around a lot of verticality and jump around. You know, I got that one wind tunnel that you travel through a lot of, and I just wanted people to explore around the map. That's why I have a lot of the different weapons encased in glass. I just wanted people to basically bounce around the map and have a lot of frenzied fighting. And, one of the aspects is I wanted to kind of adhere to the whole Christmas theme. So I was looking at various maps here and there. And one map that I came across just looking through old maps was the Twisted Christmas map that was done way back when.
Oh, yeah.
And I noticed that I think it was on, because I did a lot of talking with Sock for the Halloween Jam map, because, you know, it's an AD, it's, you know, it's an Arcane Dimensions map. So when I had some, you know, I never did an Arcane Dimensions map before, so I figured, why not ask, you know, the Grand Wizard of, you know, the guy who knows, you know, who built it basically is Sock. So, and Sock is, I mean, I've had pretty good luck just, you know, hey, what's going on, Sock? And he'll just reply right back and give me some information. And when I was on, you know, and he would say like, hey, look on my website. I've got a lot of tutorials about this and that and the other. And I noticed on the bottom of his map, he said, I took the Twisted Christmas models, you know, the enemy models, and I converted them to AD. The actual scripting is embedded in AD. And he's like, but nobody seemed to want to use it for last year's Christmas maps. And I thought, well, hey, there you go. So I think I checked out RC's playthrough of Twisted Christmas on YouTube, and I saw there was, and then also, of course, I think when I was talking one time when I chatted with Sock online, he's like, check out my map, because he did a map using those models. And anyway, I played his map, and it was pretty cool, because, you know, it's got, you know, elves smacking you in the shins and stuff, and the who knows where with candy canes, and there was the evil Santa and all. And I didn't want to use all of them, but I thought, why not, you know, have a map where it's like base enemies have captured Santa and you have to go save Santa. But I only wanted to use the Santa. And I was on the fence of having the quote-unquote evil Santa because it's the same model. It's just different elements of the model. There's the good and the bad. Because initially I think I had like a big giant robot was like a midpoint bad guy. And then I think JCR, you know, tested the map a couple of times and he's like,
I remember with the robot. Yeah. With, it was the Seeker.
The big guy. And I think you even agreed. You're like, you know, if you got all these assets, you might as well rock the bad Santa. Why not? So the whole thing was a kind of an open map. So, and the Christmas tree kind of turned out kind of cool because it gave me a place to hide the bad guys. So when they spawn in, it doesn't seem so obvious that they just spawn right in front of you. They kind of spawn behind the tree, you know, to kind of, you know, because a lot of people, from what I've read here and there, hate it when they play maps and just enemies just spawn right in front of you. That's kind of,
yeah,
not very, you know, fun for the whole immersion factor of the map. So that way I was kind of able to, you know, tuck some robot, you know, flying robots and sentinels and whatever behind the tree. And then what I did is for Christmas lights, I just did a little one unit cube Fulbright. I think one of the wads is the solids. It's just solid colors. So I just took all the colored Fulbrights and I made little, and I think it turned out pretty nice. Little Fulbright, you know, the Christmas lights for the tree. And then a lot of people like the pentagram of protection for the star on the tree. And again, I can't take credit for that. That was actually done back in 1998 by the Twisted Matrix group that made Twisted Christmas. But I thought it was a good gimmick with the tree, you know, the star on the tree. And people love the pent, and I guess that evil Santa's a real son of a gun to deal with, so it comes in handy. And
I thought it was pretty interesting how you have the entire map basically built around the tree. So it's like you have a centerpiece.
Yeah.
From which everything else radiates. It worked really well.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
It's like a Christmas Grendel's Blade kind of deal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and one thing also that I did in the map that I think because I had I had Lunaran play test it, and he was like, he caught it, and I thought it turned out pretty well. Is I got I took AD spark entities and I hit them up in a false sky, so there's actually some light snowfall. I got white sparks that kind of come down from the sky because I know Sock said, you know, and there's code in the map, in his Christmas map, that actually creates snowfall if you use Quake Spasm Spiked. But I know a lot of folks don't use Quake Spasm Spiked. They just use Quake Spasm. So I wanted to have kind of a snowy effect that, you know, would be universal. So what I did is I I kind of sewed a field of spark entities in the sky, and then I put a funk illusionary. I put a sky underneath them so that you don't see that initial firecracker kind of like confetti throw. You only see like the actual, faux snowflakes fall down, if that makes sense.
The effect is convincing enough, especially since you only have it in like a certain area. I think it works.
I could only put so many. I put a whole bunch in the sky before, and that basically like was a memory engine nightmare. The Quake engine didn't like it. It was like, this is not cool.
It's atrocious for demos too.
I'm sure. Did you have an issue with it?
What happens is anytime like a map has a lot of particles in it, or that kind of thing, it bloats the demo file sizes. It's still compressed very well, but
because when you have all the coordinates, they're being recorded into the demo format with all these any kind of dynamic entity. I believe the coordinates are recorded and updated, or it sounds like I know what I'm talking about, but that it has something to do with it.
It's something along those lines for sure.
It's this damn particles. It really is the particles. Yeah, so you jam packed a lot of gameplay in this open area, this open kind of central area. It's really cool. You have jump puzzles. You got kind of clever stuff going on with breaking the ice and getting items coming down to you. So good job, man. It's very cool.
Well, I mean, one of the game testers for the Halloween Jam map that I had, and a couple of folks were very, you know, they stressed a lot that people love breakables. They just, you know, it's just one people up. They just love breakables. So I got some backpacks with some little ammo pickups and whatnot. I think I had them in like blue backpacks on ice, on cracked ice ledges that you could shoot. And it's kind of funny because I see some demos. I think people think that they're meant to jump there, so they're trying to make these really funny like bunny hop long jumps, and it's like
something I did.
Yeah. and I'm just like, I watch him, I'm like, dude, you know you could just shoot those, right? And in fact I think initially I had him as brick or concrete, and I turned him into glass, or some might think of them as ice, and that's fine. It's a Christmas map. If you read ice, that'll work. One thing also that I did, I don't think maybe even JCR knows this, but I noticed that on the Funk message board posting for the Christmas maps, one of the fellows from the Quake World Discord, you know, the deathmatch guys, they put a post saying, hey, would any of you guys mind converting a map, one of your maps, to deathmatch for us folks over at Quake World? I think his name was BPS, and I thought, well, since mine is so open, and you know, I think I heard a couple of folks say it was kind of deathmatchy a bit, if that's an adjective. So I contacted that guy, and what I did is I removed all the models. I think I recreated the Rubicon beacons and brushwork. I busted out all the windows and put in some teleporters and some extra pickups here and there.
Oh, nice.
And I converted it to an actual fully functional deathmatch map. And I sent it over to them. So I don't know if they're using it, but I think I called it Terrabaum DM, which almost sounds like Robitussin DM, but no relation. It doesn't knock you out or anything, or cure a cold.
Any parting words for this particular episode, Greenwood?
The only thing I could say is, you know, you said you watched a little bit of RC's playthrough. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you explore a bit more of the map, you actually come across the evil Santa. He kind of like did like a mega jump right to the gold door, and then kind of concluded the map. If he would have explored that bottom area on the other side of the wall, there's other stuff to see. Look around. I got all kinds of stuff in there.
That's great advice for everyone playing. We put a lot of effort into these maps, so please look around.
That's it for part one of this special two-part episode on Christmas Jam. You won't have to wait a whole week for the next episode. We're going to put that together and get this out in the next couple of days. So thanks for listening to the Quakecast.